When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
That play too.
It's funny that you're back and you immediately bring this up. I think they would have lost that game if Palmer doesn't get hurt. He was cooking them early.
Well, Kitna came in and did good until he didn't.
Yeah, Kitna came in.
It was horrible in the second half.
There was a distinct shelf life on John Kitna's
performance. So anyway, I'm watching this game and I'm falling asleep to it. And all of a sudden I wake up to the sound of just Cammy at the bottom of the bed puking.
Oh.
And I mean throwing up mountains of food.
And she can't chew.
She's a 10 to 15 pound dog. It was like 20 pounds of food came out of her.
Vinny Ricicci or Cook saying 15 pounds of bologna in a 10 pound bag?
She probably threw up three or four times in a half hour period. She was extremely disoriented, and it looked like she had no idea where she was when it was happening. So my wife's in Phoenix. I FaceTime her. She's freaking out. We have her mom drive over to the house in case I have to take her to the emergency vet last night. We make the decision that we can wait. I wake up this morning at 7:30. She's puking in bed again. At that point, I said, that's it. I can't wait any longer. So my neighbor came over to watch Stella, and I drove all the way out to Warrendale to an emergency hospital up there that was recommended to us.
Okay.
And they ran her through a bunch of tests. Her liver numbers were so bad when they tested her, whatever device they used, she didn't even register a number. It was so far off the charts.
Old dash, 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 dash.
I don't know. That's what they said to me. So they've got her on all this liver medication. Apparently, they think if she takes to the medicine, she'll be fine. And they didn't find any cancer cells yet in her liver, which was good. So,
Letting this dog drink beer, bro? What's going on?
I don't know.
That's scary.
I got nervous that maybe she ate something, maybe she got into something.
It sucks.
Maybe Stella fed or something.
It sucks when the dog hits double digits too.
Because you think any illness or sickness means they're going to die.
Yeah, like Lance is 10 now, and he's very spry still. But like he roughhouses with Larry, and Larry we think like landed on him weird, and then he was walking with his back all hunched for a second, and then or his kidneys messed up. And it turns out he's fine. Like, he was playing around the house this morning for legitimately, like, 45 minutes. No ill effects with anything. But, yeah, it sucks when you get to that age for the dog. And you've got Stella, so she, I'm sure, loves the dogs.
Yeah. And yeah, I just told her that the dog was sick. I didn't tell her that it was anything.
Well, here's my point. You just, at this point, I guarantee you, I can predict this. You're probably hoping Cammy somehow gets, like, 6-7 more years. So that Stella's at least
small
like
dogs,
8 or 9.
I feel it can go on longer runs, so I'm hoping for
my mother-in-law
years,
had a dog that's the same breed as Lance.
Yeah.
Almost 18.
I've heard
of dogs get to 20.
That's a Cal Ripken like Iron Man streak. 18. Holy cow.
Methuselah, basically. I did not get any tease going for the Aaron Rodgers, but
I heard it. You talked about how
he was say there were bleeps involved.
Yes,
here.
He cursed.
He wasn't the only one who cursed.
No, he
That's
was
the
not.
Amazing thing. I just saw that there were bleeps. I didn't even look closely, Chalouche.
So we've got Aaron Rodgers. This could be it's the first time. It could be the last time he talks before a Steelers playoff game. Let's hope not. You don't hear him on McAfee anymore, to his credit. No offense to Pat, but he didn't rock the boat this year doing anything media-wise that alienated coaches, teammates, Steelers front office, ownership, fans. And so this is the only time he talks. We might as well let you hear what he's saying as the Steelers get ready for that Monday night playoff game and Aaron Rodgers hoping to become the first Steelers quarterback to win a playoff game since Ben Roethlisberger. Here he is with Jeff Hathorn and others a few minutes ago.
Does experience matter this time of year?
I hope so. I've had a lot of experience.
There was a cool moment that was captured by cameras of you and Mike Tomlin after the game at the yard line. Just what's been the experience of building a relationship with Mike, and where does that kind of relationship show up?
Well, it started back in April when I came out here and visited with him, and then the conversations that we had, during those months. I've enjoyed my time with Mike immensely. Mike is a phenomenal leader. He's great in front of the room. We have our meetings Wednesdays and Thursday mornings with quarterbacks that are really, really helpful, seeing his perspective on the plan, on the opponent every single week. So it's been a great experience. I really appreciate Mike, and yeah, I'm just thankful that he was a part of bringing me here.
Texans are one of the best defenses in the NFL, but they're in the bottom half of the league in deep ball, defending the deep ball, explosive passing plays. What do you guys have to be mindful of to make those types of plays while also minding their pass rush?
It starts with the protection. They got, you know, a really good D line. They got multiple guys with 10 plus sacks. Gone against Hunter for a lot of my career. I have a ton of respect for him. He's a phenomenal player. And Will, you know, we saw him in New York the last couple of years, and he just gets better every single year. He's a high energy, high effort guy who's got a lot of new pass moves to his repertoire the last couple of years, and starts with trying to slow those guys down a little bit. Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Aaron, what stands out to you about the back end of Houston's secondary?
Yeah, it's good back end. You know, obviously. Stingley's recognized as one of the top guys in the league every single year. But I think Laster's gotten better every year in his career, and he's a good player. Obviously, Petrie is one of those guys that can do a lot of different things. You know, he can play the high safety, he can play nickel. Bullock has gotten better every single year as well, so it's a really solid back end. Those guys play well together. I've seen this type of defense in practice the last couple of years. Obviously, it's a little different. But, you know, it's not... intricate as far as, you know, 30 different calls. They run their calls, their few calls, really, really well. So it's not surprising they're, you know, the top defense in the league.
Aaron, is there this might be a follow-up to what Mike was asking you, but was there a moment after you got here, whether it be before the season, camp, first couple of weeks, and you realized, yeah, this is the right move. This is what I was deciding about, and I made the right decision here.
Well, once I made the decision, I felt like it was the right decision. There were some confirmation moments for sure. You know, when I got here day one to minicamp, I felt like it was a little different in a good way, and I liked the feeling. And then obviously the Latrobe experience was a really positive one. I'm thankful that Mr. Rooney still has the team do that every single year. It's a good chemistry building, team bonding opportunity. And coming out of Latrobe, I felt good about our team that we'd be in a position late in the year to play some meaningful football games.
Aaron, I'm sure you're aware of the playoff win drought in the city. Mike said on Tuesday that, you know, a lot of these guys haven't been around that long. They don't care about that. But do you care about getting a win for, you know, this city, this team, and Mike, who hasn't had a win in the playoffs since 2016?
I care about winning. That's why I'm here. That's why I love the Monday to Saturday grind. And... you know, stats are what they are. The trends are what they are. And those trends are, any trend is always meant to be broken at some point. So hopefully we can do that.
Along those lines, I mean, how fair do you think it is to judge teams or individuals from the team based on what happens in the playoffs?
How fair is it to what?
To judge either teams or individuals within the team based on what happens in the playoffs.
I mean, it doesn't matter. You guys are still going to do it, right? I don't think it matters what I have to think about that.
Aaron, they say that in the playoffs, the speed of the game changes. Is that something that you all talked about?
I haven't heard anybody talk about it yet. You know, I think it's the opponents are all really good. You know, you go through the season, and there's matchups that give you problems. But at the end of the year, when it's 14 teams left playing and 18 teams at home, each one of those 14 teams has a chance to win the Super Bowl. So there's a reason they're here, and there's a reason that they put themselves in a position to get in the playoffs. And so everybody is good every single week.
Aaron, Cam was saying after the game that he felt like you guys were playing with house money. What's his words? Is there an advantage to having that type of mentality going into the playoffs?
I think there's definitely an advantage. I mean, when we won the Super Bowl, we were the underdogs. We were the last team in. There was something about that we felt, you know, we were kind of free rolling a little bit. But, again, every team is good in the playoffs, and you got to bring your A game to win if you want to move on and not go home. So I don't know about playing with house money. I'm not sure about that.
Aaron, you had three big completions, Freiermuth, Austin, and MBS, all in the air beyond the chains by a fair distance. Are you more, now that it's later in the season, the stakes are a little bit higher, willing to take those balls and push them down the field, hang in the pocket a little bit longer if you need to in these circumstances than early in the season?
I don't think any of those were high-risk throws. You know, those were simple concepts with slight adjustments, guys being open on time. So I'm not going to change the way I play at all.
How nice
Aaron,
to see
you. I know you had a lot of great moments, great throws in your career. Where do you want to stop and think about it?
The degree of difficulty wasn't that high. The moment obviously made that a little more special. Cal's had three touchdowns this year. Each one of them were pretty important. Take the lead against the Jets, take the lead against New England, and take the lead against Baltimore. So proud of him coming back. He obviously adds a good element to our offense. But it wasn't the best throw of my career.
For you personally, you haven't played in a playoff game since 2021. I believe that's the longest in your career you've gone without not playing in the postseason. So how good does that feel for you personally just to get back?
Yeah, it feels good. I mean, that was in 2022, January, I believe, when we played in division round. Yeah, it feels good to be back. That's why you play. You want to be playing meaningful football late in the season. And we put ourselves in that position. You know, I think some of it's embracing the way the season has gone. And at 6-6, there are a lot of people thinking we were going to be kind of stumbling to the finish. And then who knows what was going to happen. A lot of you probably in this group, either publicly or privately, we're talking about Mike T getting axed. So it feels good to shut all those comments down. Clean the slate now. Anybody can make a run. You know, it's the hottest team. We've won 4 out of 5. We're playing a lot better football than we were earlier in the season. I like our chances.
You've been on championship teams. You've been on playoff teams. Where does this team rank, you know, when it comes to the belief and the confidence that it needs moving into the playoffs?
Every team is different, you know, different personalities, different chemistry. I like the vibe that we have, but it's hard to compare it.
DK back in the building, and what can he add to your
offense? Yeah, I mean, DK is a number one receiver, so it's great having DK back. You know, he's real thankful to be back, I know, and we're all thankful to have him back as well. DK, one of the things I love about him was a lot of things, but DK kind of knows one speed, so although it's like a fast jog through today, or fast walk through, I guess as they say it, not for me and DK, so I like the work that we put in today.
Aaron, you just mentioned shutting people up, that being something that you guys relished from being 6-6 to now. How much of that is a motivation going into Monday night to continue to keep those people silent about Mike T's job or about the future?
I don't think there's any way to keep those people silent. I think that's the nature of sports media and the knee-jerk reaction of our society with social media. And it is what it is. You know, that's the way... That's the way sports is covered now. Part of it's great for our sport because there's a ton of eyes on what we do. And that's great for our business. I would just tell our guys to not get locked into the comments, get into Twitter battles, never does any good for anybody. And just not really worrying about that stuff. But I think from a personal standpoint, you know, we love Mike T. And Mike T has had an incredible career as a head coach. To go that long and never have a losing season is unbelievable. There's always going to be something. You know, when I was a young player, they said I, you know, couldn't be considered elite till I won a playoff game. And then after that, it was till you win a Super Bowl and, oh, you haven't won MVP yet and whatever they might be. For Mike T, he's had, what, 19 straight non-losing seasons. So they got to find something to try and get after him. Mike T's probably like me, though. Doesn't give a whole lot about any of those comments. But, it is nice because we all love him and want to play for him and want to win for him.
Two more guys. About those comments, is that what attracted you to come here? I mean, you said like he lets you be yourself. Are those all things that you've learned even more since you got to Pittsburgh and have worked with him?
Well, a lot of that I think is important. I think the way that he creates the culture and allows guys to be themselves is an important part of team chemistry in the locker room, being a healthy locker room. One thing I really love, and it's kind of the antithesis of where I was, is there's not really any leaks in the boat. Every year you have difficulties and adversity, both on the field and off the field. And to go through a season like this and to be able to focus on football and not have a lot of other out there has been really nice.
MVS last one on Sunday night that when U.S. quarterback has never felt with his values. What does it mean to you that your teammates have that sort of belief in you, especially in weighty moments like that?
I mean, that's what you want. You know, when you're a kid and you grow up and you watch your idols for me, it was the guys with the ball in their hand late in the game. And it was Joe Montana and Steve Young and Michael Jordan. And, you know, the conversation around a lot of those guys is that there's an incredible belief that when it's last seconds and MJ's got the ball in his hands, he's going to make it. When it's ball on the 8-yard line, need a touchdown to win the game, and Joe's making comments about John Candy up in the stands, I think everybody kind of has a belief they're going to go down and score. So when you grow up reading about that stuff and want to emulate your idols, you know, you want to have that belief from your teammates that when we get the ball in that situation with 220, there's not a doubt in their mind we're going down and score. And I think a lot of that is due to the work we put in during the week. And the other part is the connection that you make during the week and spending time together, watching film, and growing closer together so that when you know those moments, you don't want to let the other guy down. That's my mindset when I'm in the moment like that is I know why I'm here and why they brought me here, and I got to come through in those moments because I don't want to let my teammates down, Mike T down, Arthur down, Mr. Rooney, all those guys, and that's a motivation, I think, if you harness it the right way.
All right, Aaron Rodgers there. Aaron, I don't think, is someone that suffers fools or just spews BS at this point in his career. He's 42. We know that he doesn't have much of a filter, and that's gotten him into trouble sometimes. I actually do take him at face value when he gets very defensive about the Tomlin criticisms and when he praises Mike. I do think that those two guys have formed this bond or friendship here, this incredible work relationship. I mean, we saw them flirt with each other when Rodgers played for the Packers and Mike was here coaching against him. So it's interesting. It's a tough one for fans who love Rodgers but don't like Mike. It's really a conundrum for those people. And there's a lot of Steelers fans who fall into that category who love what Aaron Rodgers has brought to this team, but never, ever want to give Mike any credit for anything.
Well, specifically because one of the things people love about Rodgers, and I thought that was the most noteworthy thing, was just the sheer amount of defenses of Mike he, almost unsolicited in a way, mounted there. People always talk about how cerebral Rodgers is and how he just sees the game and knows the game at such a high level. If he really likes Mike, it stands to reason that he thinks Mike understands the game at a profoundly like advanced level, and that is one of the big complaints about Mike, is that he's rudiment, like people don't think his schemes are any good anymore.
I always offer these critiques of our media friends and everybody else who is a part of these Q&As, and it's easy for me, I guess, not having to do it, to sit here and say this is what I would have asked or this should have been asked, but that's what we do. We're pundits, we're critics, that we literally have it in our job description that we critique what other people do for a living. That's a job, and we have it. I would have loved for someone in that 10-minute scrum to just say, Aaron, I get what you're saying about Mike and what a delight it's been playing for him, and you think the guy's had a fantastic coaching career, fine. But don't you think 8 years without winning a playoff game for such a great coach is too long? Something along those lines. And I would love to have heard him try to rationalize or defend or explain why it's okay or not really that big of a deal.
He would have said he would have had mitigating circumstances.
I would have loved to have heard him go down the excuse-making path.
No two teams are the same. Things happen. It's hard to win. Because he would have fallen back, I think, on cliches.
Because he went to the same well going to bat for Mike and how it's a knee-jerk society. He did the same thing Tomlin did yesterday talking about why Harbaugh got fired. He's just applying it to Tomlin's situation. Well, it's the social media day and age. It's the way sports work now where people have to invent or come up with new ways to get on this guy. No, I think a franchise going almost a decade without a playoff win is bad, whether it's Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, Vince Lombardi, or Marvin Lewis running the show.
The difference between Mike and virtually all those guys other than Marvin Lewis is the ones who went a decade without a playoff win didn't actually get there because they got fired before that could happen.
Yes.
That's the thing. That's actually – see, I think people get mad at Mike as an avatar. Like, he's more of a stand-in for their frustrations with Art Rooney, in a sense. Like, you can be mad and say facts about the coach. It's the fact that we know he's, like, in a position of complete job security that bothers people more than the actual... Like, the failures bother people the most. It's the fact that for any other fan base, you'd expect and understand that he probably was...
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Gonna get canned.
Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Comes your way at 425. Time to check out Nine Yards Golf Lounge, now open the block Northway in Ross Township. We are live at the Rivers Casino Sportsbook. It is jam-packed in here. Fans filing in to watch the college football playoff game tonight.
A lot of powder blue. I think they're just going to see tons of powder
Hottie
blue.
Hottie Toddy,
here.
The U.
The Grove.
Michael Irvin going crazy on the sideline, having unfettered access to do whatever the hell he wants during the game.
I heard
getting on all fours, barking like a dog.
That was Ace's.
Having a... prop belt that he uses
to whip things.
Yes.
Yeah. Ace, speaking of barking like a dog, Ace likes to have like his little picnics. He's watching Peppa Pig still, so it's like English things like tea, and he calls cookies.
How about crumpets?
He calls cookies biscuits, which is just, it's very jarring, right?
Has he said bloke yet?
No. That's more of an Australian thing.
How about wanker?
No, that's like a cuss, you know, derogatory kind of thing.
He hasn't
said bloody or anything like that. But he will, in the middle of doing this little game with me in our basement, just start pretending he's a dog for no reason. So one minute he's like, Dad, can I pass the broccoli? And then he just starts going, woof, 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 woof. No real reason for bringing that up other than, you know, he's just.
Yeah, why did you bring that up?
I don't know. He's all over the map, the kid.
Steelers and Texans here at the Rivers. The Steelers are a 3-point underdog. Steve Palazzolo, no better football analyst in America than Steve. No taller. Football analyst in America than Steve joins us right now to break down this playoff game.
Do we know that for a fact? That last part? Do we know for a fact there's not like a pure 7-footer out there?
Sam used to claim that there was some Chicago beat writer who was my size, but we haven't seen him in years. So I'm claiming the title.
Can you imagine if you just found out like some other media company just hired like the equivalent of Mark Eaton to write about football, and then you not only were you usurped, but the guy would have like 6-7 inches in height on you. Seven foot four.
WFAN in New York for Boomer and Geo had that intern that was 7'2".
Oh,
remember that
God.
Picture
yeah.
that went out of that
yeah,
kid?
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah, Steve, that's the one guy, but he's not working in football media yet, so you need to like find out about him and try to make sure he doesn't get a job.
I'm the king so far. That I know of. I ran into a kid who used to play at UNC and then was in Game of Thrones as one of the monsters there named Neil Singleton.
Okay.
I ran into him one time. He was 7'5".
Are you aware,
seven,
Steve? That
whoa. And he's not working in football
he's not
media.
Working in football
just
media.
A bigger human.
No, 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 no. I've run into people that are much taller than me before.
Steve, speaking of tall people generally and Pittsburgh, I'm sure you have seen the classic Schwarzenegger vehicle Predator. Is that a safe assumption?
Yeah.
If it bleeds, we can kill it, all that good stuff. The guy who played the Predator was named Kevin Peter Hall. He was from Penn Hills around here, these parts. 7'3".
Jeez.
Yeah.
Didn't
crazy.
Play he was like a, he was a thespian. I don't think he played basketball or anything. I think he was just a theater actor.
All right, Steve. Let's start with this question for the game Monday night. Who has the edge at quarterback, the Texans or the Steelers, and why?
Oh man, I think Rodgers, like the second half of the season, Rodgers, some of the command of the offense. I mean, it's like a week to week thing, right? I thought he was awful against the Browns. He was much better the other day, but maybe not. Like the first three quarters, it's like really how many times can you get to a check down and an escorts swing screen? But once they opened it up a little bit, it's like all right, it's like he was jabbing for three quarters, and then they finally took a few shots, and he's able to execute them, Rodgers. So I'll give Rodgers and the Steelers the slight edge here. I don't always trust Stroud. It's similar, right? Stroud goes through these stretches where he's not feeling it. He's not seeing it, not seeing the field. He's not handling pressure that well, but he is capable of making big throws in high leverage situations. But I think Rodgers with DK Metcalf back, I would say, in a vacuum. I'd trust Rodgers in a one-game setting. One-game setting.
Houston's defense is second in the league in scoring and first in total defense. If there is a weakness in that group, where is it, Steve?
Well, the D-line's great. The two corners on the outside are great. Over the last couple of years, they haven't done this as much this year as they did last year. They will have some coverage busts on the back end. They did it early against the Colts last week, and then they put their backups in. Yeah, and so and it's like Kamari Lassiter wasn't playing. You know, every time he's gone out, he went out the week before against the Chargers, and Tre'Mon Smith, the backup, got picked on a little bit. So there's some corner depth issues, but they'll give you a couple opportunities to maybe hit a deep shot. And then I would say the linebacker level, just because they're so – I mean, and they're not bad there. They fly to the football. They've got the pass rush. They're one of the best teams of tying the pass rush and the coverage together. The reason why they create so much havoc is they rush the passer, and they're just locked down on the back end. They just rush four and make life difficult for you. But I would say the linebacker level, and maybe the Steelers have an opportunity with their quick-hitting passing game to maybe, you know, neutralize the two edge rushers, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, get the ball into space and, you know, just break a few tackles like they did against the Ravens. Now the Texans are a much better tackling team, but I think that's probably the best strategy. Get rid of the ball quickly and then pick your spots as far as how often you're going to take shots down the field.
The last three games, Steve, the Steelers have averaged over 6 yards a carry. That's the best in the NFL. They just don't run it that much because Aaron wants to throw it and he wants to use the short pass as an extension of the run game. I bring that up because if you were ideally building a game plan to beat Houston, are you better off running it a bunch, or are you better off putting the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands and just trusting him to make plays?
I'd probably want to run it on paper, but they're really good in that respect too. So I think it's probably the quick passing game, and this might be one of those games where, you know, him coming up to the line of scrimmage with a run play, checking out of it 100 times for dinking and dunking down the field could actually work. Now, you got to break some tackles here and there. You need Gainwell, you know, you need Warren, you need those guys to break some tackles and, you know, make some plays after the catch. But I think it's a combination of let him read it out, you know, run it when it's favorable, get it out of your hands when it's favorable. But I think it's trying to put those long, sustained drives.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Together and the old cliche, you know, stay out of third and long. You absolutely have to stay out of third and long against this defense because they are so good on the back end and so good with that four-man rush.
Steve, I think the conventional wisdom suggests that Steelers offense will have a hard time scoring against Texans defense for pretty obvious reasons, where each unit ranks. Can the Texans score on the Steelers?
If they run those crossing routes that the Steelers couldn't figure out the other day. I mean, I would almost start with that. Like, hey, have you guys figured out communication on these over routes after last week? The Texans are a little hit or miss offensively. I mean, I think it's going to be a close, hard-fought game. You know, their offensive line got better as the year went on, but especially early in the season when they ran into good pass rushes, they were not holding up that well. And again, Stroud goes through these lulls. Like, you know, go back. I think this might look similar to the Kansas City game. You know, maybe on both sides of the ball, if you watch Texans Chiefs on Sunday Night Football a few weeks back, it was 10-10 in the fourth quarter. The Texans were, I mean, the Chiefs don't throw the ball down the field. I don't think the Steelers will a lot. Maybe they you know, feel one out early with DK down the field just to open things up a bit. But I think it looks similar, like the Chiefs throwing the ball underneath. I think the Steelers will do something similar. And then Stroud, when he's under pressure, like he just went through a lot. They had like 6 straight drives where they just kept punting against the Chiefs in that game. And then out of nowhere, Stroud, you know, create that on a third and long and makes it, you know, he'll make a tight window throw to Nico Collins. So that's where I think it's very similar. It honestly might come down to which quarterback makes one of those special third and long type of plays in a close, hard-fought game. So, yeah, I think the Texans offense has some question marks against what should be a good pass rush.
Steve, when you're – I know you're obviously looking at football both history with PFF and now with the 33rd team, it's through an analytical lens a lot of the time. So I would imagine that when you hear historical stats about this franchise hasn't won a game on Monday Night Football in so many years, or the opposite, right? Or this team hasn't won a road game in so many years, maybe you would kind of turn a cross eye to that. But when you see that the Texans, who have existed now for almost a quarter century, have literally never won a road playoff game, to what degree do you put any stock in that as being a relevant part of this matchup?
You're right. I usually don't care about that stuff, but I do care about it when the Steelers are involved. Like, we had Pony on our show last week just to list out, give me all the Tomlin. Like, he's the most consistent coach ever. And so in Steelers-related games, those things matter. And the fact that I can't believe the Texans aren't playing Saturday afternoon. That's their spot, the 4:30 window in the playoffs. Yeah.
But the Chargers won down the Panthers won down them by being 8-9 this year.
By being eight and nine. Yeah. I mean, what a gift for the Steelers to get the 4-5 game on a Monday night, where that's, you know, we've got the 73-0 first quarters going head to head with the Monday night. You never lose. This is something's got to give here. It might matter a little bit for the Texans. I don't know if that particular one matters a ton. They're a different type of team, but they've done well in the wild card round the past couple of years. They blew out Cleveland. The defense dominated the Chargers last year. They've played well under D'Amico Ryans in this first round. So I think that probably matters more than the fact that it's on Monday night. But the Tomlin consistency, Monday night, playoffs, that stuff probably does come into play.
Steve, I'm going to give you a couple more rapid fire who's better, and I'm going to name a player for both teams, and you tell me who's better. You already gave me Rodgers over Stroud. Who's better, Fairbairn or Boswell?
Oh, kickers? Oh, geez.
Yep.
Boswell?
Nico Collins or DK Metcalf?
Nico.
Ooh.
He's really good.
Rank the four edge rushers: Highsmith, Watt, Hunter, Anderson.
Let's go Anderson, Watt, Hunter, Highsmith.
Here's one.
What if I threw Herbig in there? Would he be fifth, or would he leapfrog one of those guys?
He's probably got to be fifth, even though, you know, I'm a huge Herbig fan. He's always benefited from, you know, smaller sample size efficiency.
Al Shaier, Patrick Queen.
That was mine.
Al Shaier. Heart and soul of that defense.
Steve, how much of that – just this is more of a broad question. You watch them, and you see what they do to teams, and you see how good that defense is. And we all talk about the corners and the edge rushers because that's where you pay the big money. To what degree do you ascribe their success on defense from just the – like the actual way physically they go about just beating the crap out of teams? Because I said earlier in the show, it feels like watching whatever the modern version of the 2008 Steelers defense would be, right?
Yeah.
Like, where they are just physically trying to intimidate, be violent within the rules, and make every single thing you do, even if it's a positive gain, hurt badly. Because every time I watch them, I come away kind of having that basic thought.
It is absolutely a huge factor. I mean, if you watch Kamari Lassiter at corner, right? Like, we love draft and the draft debates. Everybody was like, oh, he ran a 4.55, or maybe it was a 4.6 at his pro day. And they took him in the second round, and it doesn't matter. He's just a really good football player, and he gets in there and he tackles. You mentioned Al Shaier, Toto, the linebackers, Jalen Petrie. He's a safety by name, but he was on the all-pro ballot as a slot corner because that's where he plays. And he had the big hit on Rashee Rice a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That middle of the defense does hit hard. They fly around. They hit hard. They've got a lot of speed. It's absolutely a factor. So you've got the big names, the pass rushers, absolutely lockdown corners on the outside. But the middle of that defense absolutely hits hard, and that's why they are one of the best, if not the best, defense in the league.
Who are you picking, Steve?
What did I do in the game? I think I took Houston. If this was on, I mean, my only doubt is the Monday night thing. I mean, look, Rodgers really impressed me in the second half without DK last week. I think they have an opportunity, but I'll take the Texans in a close game here.
Steve Palazzolo, he mentioned 4-5 when I fell asleep watching that 0-5 Steelers-Bengals playoff game last night, Malzi.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Johnson was talking about how he fell in the draft because he ran a 4-5 at the combine, and he ran slow because he was nervous that day.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also brought up that maybe one of the reasons why he struggled in that game was because he was out tailgating with Bengals fans at noon.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Did you know that, Steve?
I did not know that.
Story? Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Phil Sims loved it. Anyways.
Not surprised.
Good talk.
Oh,
we'll see you next week, Steve.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. That was their first playoff game in Cincinnati in like 15 years, maybe?
Yeah, since the 90-91 season or something. Do you agree with me that if the Texans just wore Steelers uniforms, if this was how the Steelers were, if it was the exact same team, that this town
people would love them?
That they would be like more gaga than usual over a Steelers team? Because they just play the way I think people here still desperately want football to be played.
The thing I can't figure out about the Texans' defense is, for as great as it's been all year, why did it look kind of crappy in two out of the last three games against the Raiders and Colts of all teams?
The Raiders one would be much more troubling to me than the Colts. The Colts, I felt like there was a lot going on there. First of all, I think Leonard, just as a mobile guy, there's some wild card stuff there. And there's some, with Pierce, you can hit some deep stuff. Like some just, you can take a chunk and it changes things.
Yep.
Plus, then they took all the, they called off the dogs.
Yeah.
The Raiders one's a head scratcher, but body of work overall, man. Just watching them, like it was like blunt force trauma to the Chiefs. Just basically hit them into submission. They did that to so many good teams this year. They beat the absolute tar out of Josh Allen. I know that game was close. But just, they beat people up, man.
Donnie, you know who was a hidden star in that Steelers-Bengals playoff win, which got that 05 team going to a Super Bowl? Cedric Wilson.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, I mean, he had the touchdown that kind of put the nail in the coffin.
He also drew a huge pass interference penalty in that game that set up a score. Their first of the game.
I'm just laughing about the gadget touchdown that he caught. One of, like, the longest developing plays I feel like I can remember them pulling off in that era where they would always have something up their sleeve.
Do you remember how the play started?
Like, what do you, like, the
how did the gadget
sequence
start? Yeah.
My recollection is that it was, like, was it a double pass? Because I know there was, like, a pass way back across the field to Ben.
There was.
And then he had to kind of let it go.
Yeah. Do you remember how it started, Donnie?
Yeah, Randall L. was in the backfield. He got
Randall
the direct snap.
Yeah, that's Ben acted like the snap went over his head, and it was actually to Randall L.
That's right.
Because then when they broke it down, Phil Sims like couldn't believe that the Bengals didn't see it coming, because when else would Randall L. be in the backfield?
You know, that was them being the Bengals, you know?
Yeah.
I do still think if Palmer probably isn't hurt, that game ends a different way, because he was also on a very different level.
Another little nugget from that game.
He was very good.
Did you know that James Ferrier and Rudy Johnson were next-door neighbors growing up?
Just randomly?
Yes, as kids. They lived next door to each other. And
that's
they both ended up playing in the NFL.
That's got to be very rare. In fact, other than, like, famous football families where, like, three NFL players came from the same house.
Donnie, did you know that?
Even in Florida where there's such a concentration of talent, that has to be a first.
Did you know that,
Don? I did not know that. The late Rudy Johnson.
Yeah. All right, that music means it's time for the Donnie Football Debrief, the biggest football topic of the day. I want to remind everybody that vacations begin here at the Pittsburgh Travel Showcase presented by AAA Travel, January 23rd through the 25th at the David Lawrence Convention Center. Exclusive discounts and convenient one-stop shopping. Dream it, plan it, book it. Experience, tickets and details, PittsburghTravelShowcase.com, where your vacations are waiting for you. All right, Don, what do you got for us today, pal?
The Debrief. January 8, 2026. Let's have a conversation about some of the coaches that are available. Another coach getting fired earlier today. You know, one of my favorites, Mike McDaniel. I will give him credit. He turned around that season midway through. I thought he was going to be gone before the Dolphins even played here, and he gets fired after the Dolphins finish up the season. Out of the available coaches or coordinators, which ones would you be worried about if the division rivals hired them? If the Ravens or Browns hired this guy, or a couple of names you could throw out there, would that make you feel a little bit worried about what those teams could turn into?
Well, I think Brian Flores is the obvious one. The work he did here, the 1 year, what he's done with the Minnesota defense. They rallied to win 9 games again there this season. We saw the number he did on the Lions defense that Christmas night game. Turned their defense around 2 years ago. They went from one of the worst in the NFL to to one of the best, and that's why they went 14-3 2 years ago. We saw him have success in Miami. Now, he burned a lot of bridges. He pissed Fitzpatrick off. He pissed Tua off. I mean, honestly, I think, you know, to me, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a fun story and a great guy and was, at times, a quarterback that could win you games and lose you games, almost like a Jameis Winston, but not really a great quarterback by any means. So the fact that he ticked off Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't really bother me in the least. And we Tua know what Tua stinks. Is. We know, yeah, Tua is a guy that won a lot of games and this year just completely cratered. When I say won a lot of games, I mean he had a winning record as a quarterback up until this year.
Also, Flores wanted Herbert there.
Yes, that's the rumor.
Like, I think that seems pretty obvious given the way he and Tua butted heads, and he was right to want
Herbert. Well, I think no
he
one's
was right to want Herbert.
No one's told me this, but I'm pretty sure Marino wanted Herbert too. And the owner went against the greatest quarterback in franchise history.
Yeah,
and possibly the head coach there.
Stephen Ross got nobody to blame but himself.
No, so Flores would be the top guy for me.
Are we talking about independent of which team they'd end up with, obviously? Because Stefanski to the Ravens would scare the crap out of me. That I know we laugh, kind of. He won a playoff game.
That would not scare the crap out of me.
When he was sitting in his basement, they won a game with Mike Prefer as the acting head coach, and Stefanski was a minute behind live action. I found myself in that predicament. I think the guy knows how to coach offense. I think Lamar wants to be coached by an offensive head coach. If the Ravens hired him, like, broadly speaking, I think they are a well-run franchise enough that they would have a good defensive coordinator in there, whether they kept or they found somebody else.
Yeah.
I think he would do a very good job maxing out Lamar.
Yeah, I'm not as worried. I thought he had the same issue with Chubb in his prime that Harbaugh had with Henry, where the Steelers would beat the Browns some games, and you'd be like, wait a minute, why didn't Chubb see the ball in the second half? He started wanting to throw the ball to win and got too cute. And putting the ball in Baker Mayfield's hands instead of Nick Chubb.
I do think there's a difference between putting the ball in Mayfield's hands because the bloom is off that rose yet again.
Yep.
Versus putting the ball... I don't. He sucked down the stretch.
I know, but he had that injury and played through it. I think it's similar
to... I'm talking about current Baker.
No, I know. I'm saying this year I think he played through an injury, too, just like he did that last year in Cleveland.
I guess my point is there's a big difference for me between putting the ball in Lamar's hands and letting him go out and do his thing versus putting the ball in Baker's hands because you want to prove how smart
you are. I don't think I'd love if Minter ended up in Baltimore because I would think he's got a lot of that Mike McDaniel.
I think he would hire a good staff. I think
Mike McDonald.
Potato,
vibes.
Potato.
Yes.
The one guy I think that could go to the Browns where I'd be like, I think he will. I'm going to set an expectation here because I know what you're already thinking. You're going to say, Malzi, no one can fix that mess. I think if Harbaugh somehow, and he'll have his pick so he won't end up there, but if by some happenstance, Jimmy Haslam backed up a Brinks truck and said, I am going to give you more money than God to come and do this job. I do think he would raise them to a consistent level of like competence where they would no longer be what, and I know it doesn't play out this way very often, they would no longer look at the schedule and be like, okay, there's two wins.
Yeah.
I think they would become a much tougher out. But that's the only guy in that particular situation because of his resume and the gravitas and everything else. I think there are other really good coaching candidates like Minter, like Flores, who would go to Cleveland and it would be the place where your career goes to die.
I still think that Harbaugh could get swallowed whole by the whale that is the Browns' ineptitude.
I have to.
The same way Mike Holmgren went there and had won in Green Bay and Seattle and was just a farce running the Browns.
I understand that. I do have to circle back, though, to you not being too scared of Stefanski and an organization like the Ravens. The guy won double-digit games and
went to
the playoffs twice there and won a playoff game. Like I feel like as much as we chuckle at some of the stuff, sell him short at your own risk.
I just – if I'm the Ravens, I've got Lamar Jackson, and I'm not the biggest Lamar Jackson fan, but he is a two-time MVP, and they are clearly the best available job. I'm going to – my reason for firing John Harbaugh is replacing him – with the little brother franchise in our division's fired coach. Like, just the optics of that look so bad. And maybe he would be the right coach there, but, man, I would think you can aspire for much better than that, than somebody else's retread coach.
I don't even think it's that, though. For them, they'd say, if our franchise quarterback, who we still are committed to for, like, at least, 3 to 5 more years, let's figure.
Yeah.
wants an offensive head coach and needs a new voice in there that's going to have a new scheme, a new way of doing things, then I think that's how you have to consider it. And then by that logic, then I think you look directly to Stefanski.
That was a Donnie Football Debrief.